Hello and welcome to Game of Thrones Offseason. Tonight we're discussing the villains of Game of Thrones, who we love to hate. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Yes. Here we are, back to talk about the best show on television. I'm your host, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder. Joining me,
Mr. Dave Child.
I'm Dave Child. I'm here. I'm going to talk about some baddies. Ooh, they're the baddest of the bad, and I'm going to talk about them.
In case you didn't get that, we're talking about villains tonight. Also joining us for a special appearance, Tara Erickson.
I guess I'll talk weird, too. My name's Tara Erickson, and I'm here to talk about Game of Thrones. That's not how I talk. Cool.
And
just like the Game of Thrones people.
Ryan Malady, what you got for us?
Hello.
Oh, boy. Oh,
Littlefinger's with us tonight. Wow.
It is me, Ryan Malady, and chaos is not a pit. It's a ladder. And you can climb it all the way to the top of this impeccable podcast. Happy to be here.
We went from Aiden going to Batman.
It's like downhill at the end, but it was good in the beginning.
Some of our villains are here with us on the panel. Others are still in Westeros. We are here to talk about the wicked men and women of the land of Game of Thrones. Mm. One thing they all have in common is their ruthlessness in meeting their goals. Mm. They will do anything. But I just want to talk about villains in general for a second, because for me, great movies have to have a great villain. Right. The villain has to be just as compelling as the protagonist for me, or I lose interest in people's motivations and what's going on. I want to be rooting for both sides. So what I love about Game of Thrones is the fact that we do, whoever the villain is, we understand their motivations, and sometimes we even might side with them, even though they're fighting our other favorite character.
Yeah,
How do you guys feel about them?
I agree. I feel like there's a common misconception about villains. They have to be unlikable. On the contrary, they have to be extremely likable. All characters in a story have to be likable. And the great villains of Game of Thrones prove just that, that you can have an impeccably evil character, but like them nonetheless and root for them on both sides. Do you want to talk about some news before we jump into your...
I would absolutely love to talk about some news. I think Ryan and Dave have some news for us tonight.
We got some hot news.
Yes. Hot gossip, as Ryan just like...
My chair malfunctioned.
He's going down a well to get his news.
We're good. All right, I came down there and I came back up. Do you want me to start us off?
Yeah, you can start.
Why not? All right, so guys, I got for us the... it happened a couple weeks ago, but since we only do the show... By the way, I hope your holidays were fantastic.
Thank you.
Welcome back. Happy New Year, everybody. But a couple weeks ago, the Season 8 teaser came out. HBO released it. It's not a trailer, technically, because it doesn't have any actual new footage, although I will get to that. We did find some new footage in a HBO commercial. But first, let's take a look or a listen to the new Season 8 teaser for Game of Thrones.
Oh, there's torches in this one.
Yeah. So we find ourselves down here in the crypts of Winterfell.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
And you see the iconic feather get brushed off, the feather that Robert Baratheon left for his late wife.
All this horror that's come to my family, it's all because I couldn't love a motherless child.
Poor Jon Snow's mother?
You are a Stark. You might not have my name, but you have my blood.
Bunch of callbacks. Well, that's a lie. Ned Stark was lying to his son.
Yeah.
We know now. Here we are, the three Stark children. Coming face to face. Was it Lyanna? Was it Rhaegar? Who those characters are in stone.
It kind of looks like reflections of themselves. Yeah,
I think it's them.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Them as
facing their own death.
Yeah, facing their own like destruction, I think.
Yeah, because it looks like winter's coming and maybe they've just been frozen there. Who knows? What do you guys make of that?
I think it's supposed to be metaphorical. I think it's supposed to be the like This is their family is dead, and this is where they'll end up once they come face to face with, like, this could be their death.
Well, that implies that there's someone left to bury them.
Oh,
so it's
true.
Not scorched earth is what we're looking at, maybe.
Maybe, but it also means they're dead. All three of them are dead. All three of the Starks are dead.
And Melisandre is going to bring them all back. That's what she does.
I also don't think they're literally going to die. I think it's just the threat of death is they have to
It's looming.
Come face to face.
Looming underground.
Yeah.
It's where all of our destinies are.
But seeing that in the statues, it's like that was there years ago, and it's like they are right where they're supposed to be, and like... they almost didn't have a choice, and this was their fate. I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of another way that I saw it, is like they are where they, like, how is it possible that the three of them are there together at that moment, discovering themselves in stone? So it's almost like this was always laid out to happen.
Yeah, the idea of fate has been challenged on the show many times, mm-hmm. but we're starting to see that there is something to it, especially with Bran and his three-eyed raven abilities. It's almost as if you can't see anything as an accident. It's all been preordained or, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
pre-aligned.
Isn't that interesting that we don't see Bran? That it's the three, it's Sansa.
It's the three strongest, like...
Yeah.
Maybe Bran was envisioning all of that.
Three-eyed raven?
Yeah.
Maybe they're the eyes?
They're the eyes. I don't know, that's interesting how it's like, because I just said, like, the last remaining Starks, and then I was like, wait, that's not true.
Yeah, no, yeah. Bran.
True.
Yeah.
Bran's the last. Good catch.
Do you have some news for us?
Well, before I have another, I have one more video, but before we show you guys, we wanted to take a second and say thank you, as always, for being fans of our show. If you're watching right now on YouTube, please give us a like if you like what you see. Give us a comment. Tell us what you think about this particular teaser or the discussion that we're having today, who your favorite villain is. And if you're on iTunes listening, I mean, don't feel shy. Come on down to YouTube and check out, you know, watch these trailers with us. But you can also give us a rating on iTunes. See, you know, we'd love to see the ratings and hear what you have to say about our podcast.
Definitely.
And thank you for making us the ESPN of TV talk. Being a part of AfterBuzz has been such a great part of my life. So
absolutely.
We love you.
Thank you, guys.
I love it.
On to you, Mr. Dave Jones.
No, get around the one more.
Jesus.
All right, guys, we're going to throw
35
up. I know. We're going to throw up on this HBO came out with a trailer for all its new
Henry
original programming.
Winkler's got
and we're just fast-forwarding here to 38 seconds in. We see an actual never-before-seen scene from the new season. Go ahead.
Okay.
One fella is yours. You're Chris.
That's it.
And cut it.
So that's it. You got 5 seconds of brand new footage. You see Daenerys Stormborn with Jorah Mormont up in the north, walking up on Jon and Sansa. Jorah was there with Daenerys. They walked up originally together. You know, Jon standing there with Sansa, and they walk up, and then Sansa says, "Winterfell is yours." I was on Reddit looking, you know, scrolling through stuff, and I saw that there was a parallel between when Ned Stark welcomed Cersei into King's Landing. He says, "Winterfell is yours, my lady." And the same, and, you know, from the background, Jon Snow's looking like, what does he mean by that? And then same thing's going on here with Brienne of Tarth right over Sansa's shoulder, like, skeptical, I don't know what's going on. It's interesting if they meant to do that, because it parallels season one quite closely. You know, another a foreign queen coming into Winterfell for the second time. We'll see what happens.
Look at how cuddly Jon is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's all grown up.
Yeah, cuddly with the
Anyway, so that's my section. And
I
got stuff now.
You have anything?
What you got for
it's
us?
Your turn now.
I got no visuals, though, but I do got some, I got some news. Mm-hmm. This is actually about the future of Game of Thrones, because they're talking about prequels coming out after this last season of Game of Thrones. And they're very tight-lipped about anything about the prequels. They're not saying who the characters are, who anyone is in it, but they have announced some casting. And the biggest name is Naomi Watts. She's going to be in it.
I love her. Me too.
It's very good. It's very interesting casting. I feel like she's very Targaryen-y. Maybe.
Yeah.
She feels like she would fit into that
I
world.
Agree. Yeah.
But they're also casting a bunch of young, like, as no name as Maisie Williams was, like, starting off in this season. but they're casting a lot of young, diverse cast members. Mm. So they're trying to have as many races as possible in this like prequel season. It's not going to be as white as the Game of Thrones.
As the White Walkers.
Yes. So that's really nice that it's going to be more diverse and we're going to get see more shades of the world. And that's all my news. But Naomi Watts, it's pretty cool. She was asked at the Cannes Film Festival about this, and she's already trained to be like, I can't tell you anything.
She said it's a
great world.
It's what a magical world. And everyone's like, is it now?
But then she says nothing else. We don't even know what her character's name is. All the character listings and like...
It's like a single letter.
They're all like W2 and L3.
Oh, God.
Like they won't say anyone's name or any clue because the mythos is so big that if they say like, oh, we're casting someone named Dunk and someone named Egg, they might know exactly who those characters are.
Right.
Which I kind of hope it's the Dunk and Egg story. But right now we just have W2 and L3. That sounds like weird auto parts.
Gonna go down to the Dunkin' Egg for some
Dunkin' Egg.
For Dunkin' some hash
Donuts.
Browns.
They have eggs.
The one bit of news I want to share before we get into our countdown is that the premiere is actually scheduled for April 14th. We've got a date.
Whoa. April 14th.
April 14th. Write it down. Calendar. Start. Put on your friend's calendar. Write home about it.
Take off work.
Tattoo.
Cancel that wedding.
Tattoo.
They're still gonna love you, but the premiere is only on that date.
Exactly. So. Tune in, or else you're going to miss everything the next day, because everybody's going to be talking about it, spoiling it for
you. We'll be here, spoiling everything.
We will be. So, watch it, tune in to us, hear what we got to say. All right, top of my list, guys.
Villains, let's get into it.
I made a list of villains. I put maybe, like, not the coolest villains at the top, number 12, and then I count down to what I think the best villains of the show are. Maybe not my favorite, just the show's biggest villains.
That's what was your theme.
Feel free to debate me, but this is just my order of, you know, worst to best villains, I guess. Thanks. So let's start with Euron Greyjoy, as King of the Iron Islands, King of Salt and Rock, Son of the Sea and Wind, Lord Reaper of Pike. He says, I don't mock the Drowned God. I am the Drowned God. From Old Town the Carth, when men see my sails, they pray. What do you guys think of Euron? I like him as, like, this, you know, pirate to the extreme. Yeah. Takes no prisoners. Like, he just takes what he wants.
You know, I like Euron. For the, I mean, yeah, his charm as a dirty pirate is awesome. But, the main thing I love about Euron is that he reminds us how big this world actually is. It wasn't until, you know, what, six seasons down the road that we realized there was Euron with his, you know, following of half of the Greyjoys, you know, and their thousand ships. It's just there are characters out there in this world that can bring across that great deal of conflict late in the game. It just reminds you that this world is bigger than the box we try to put it in sometimes when we talk about the Game of Thrones.
Right.
Yeah. I just like that he ripped out everybody's tongues because he wanted silence. I'm like, totally. If I could do that just for a moment and then be like, I'll give it back later.
I'm glad you put that coda in there.
Just real quick.
Just one
specifically
second.
To Mr. Dave Child. And then hang it around and then be like, you can talk now again.
I would wish that could happen.
Yeah,
I wish I could
have take
my...
so much Tylenol.
Go ahead. Finish your sentence.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, Euron did have to murder his brother Balon to take control of the throne, but
everyone
sort of supported that. Yeah,
yeah,
and his father.
Yes,
he's kind of a classic bad guy. He's kind of like, I feel like in the level of bad guys, it makes sense that he's like number 12 because it feels like if you're fighting the Game of Thrones video game, he's like level 1 boss.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where he's just kind of like, yeah, this is the bad guy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot worse guys. He's almost like too bad. He's not that. We were talking earlier about how likable like bad guys have to be and relatable. And this guy's like, he's just kind of a, you know, kick stuff down, burn stuff up.
Right.
Yeah.
A big part of what makes a great villain is their motivations, right? Yeah. What's motivating this guy and to make the cruel and zany decisions that he makes?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he just wants a sugar mama of evil.
Yeah.
That's really
he
what
wants
he wants.
Her.
He wants a woman in power and he wants to be her foot soldier and that's just all. He's a simple man.
He wants power, but he's not like
not
a
really.
Chess master.
Yeah.
He's like, once he got power, he'll probably be bored with it and move on to something else.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like he's kind of witty. I liked his line that I wrote down where he's like, well, I have 1,000 ships and 2 good hands that he said to Jamie. And you're like, oh, sick burn, man. which I enjoyed.
I just remember, I remember him doing jazz hands.
And you got to know he wrote that down like, like 2 weeks prior. Yeah, yeah. When he's sitting in his ship like, I'm going to burn him.
1,000 ships and 2 good. What is it? God.
He's definitely the villain behind the scenes practicing his lines. Before he got
He's looking in the mirror, looking at his leather, and he's like,
he looks like the villain.
I'm going to unstrap a few of these straps, let them dangle, let them hang. I look crazy.
I want to make sure we get through all these, so I'm going to jump to Sons of the Harpy. Okay. Now, I like them a bit better than Euron, just because they've got these masks, you know, and they're named after the Harpy, their traditional symbol of the slave masters. They wore the golden masks, the horned faces, resembling the Harpies. And they, you know, came about because they were opposing the rule of Daenerys. She was coming to Meereen, and, you know, they were made up of former slaves who were against, you know, her being there and taking control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were, collectively, they were a threat. I mean, they took out Ser Barristan, you know, they took out, what did they take out? Grey Worm? No, but he was okay. They were a faceless villain, almost. I mean, we had that one character, I don't know if we ever, I think she did get a name, Ma, I think was her name.
Yeah.
She was the one who would cradle the men, you know, before she killed them. You know? they kind of had a face of leadership, but ultimately were faceless and seemingly motivationless. It just seemed like they just wanted their old ways
to maintain.
Yeah.
They wanted, like, the slaves to still be slave masters. They wanted the old ways. If anything, they're scary, especially from a modern perspective, because they're anonymous, hidden, can pop up at any moment. They feel a lot like terrorists that we kind of have these days. And it's and it feels relatable because it feels like a real-world scary issue where this old mentality is bringing everyone together, and you also don't know who's on whose side.
You could be Son of the Harpy.
And Tyrion made a deal with them, and they broke the treaty.
Right.
They went back and just went nuts. So it's like I feel like they are like true terrors in that regard.
Yeah, and it could be anyone. It could be the person next to you. Like in that scene where everyone starts putting on their masks in the actual, like, when they start to attack in the dragon pit, that's kind of, or what became the dragon pit, the gladiator pit. That's like where they really kind of showed their face and really got to be a scary villain.
Yeah, I agree. Next on my list, number 10, the High Sparrow. And I think he's a bit better than Sons and Euron just because, you know, he's this holy man, unexpecting, serves the people till he disagrees with your morals, and then he'll lock you up forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was appointed the High Septon, which he reestablished the faith militant, which was this holy army of hell, really.
Yeah.
And Cersei thought it was going to be her secret weapon, but that totally backfired on her.
Totally.
Yeah, this guy is really scary because he militarizes faith, right? And faith is an idea that's so much bigger than anyone, whether you're good or bad. If you throw the idea of a god, an overarching, you know, deity, it's like if you have people believing in that, then you can get them to do whatever you want. And you have this guy that has the citadel like by the balls.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, whatever he says goes, and someone like that, I don't know if that is counted explicit, is it? I don't think it counts. But you have someone like that with their motivation is just purely to hold on to power. They have no interest in material wealth, in gold, in they're only interested in having people do exactly what they believe in. And with someone like that, pure power at their disposal, it's a really scary thing.
And someone with a righteous cause can be very scary.
Yeah.
Or what they believe is a righteous cause. And that what makes him so you can't control him. He seems like such a nice, sweet priest guy. And then his righteous cause is like giving him that tunnel vision, and he won't listen to any outside influence. Only what he believes and what his faith dictates.
And it gets crazy when he starts, like, the mutilation. Like, the 7-point star on the forehead. You're like, that's forever. And that's like, come on, man.
Come on.
That's forever. We're stepping out of psychological land, and we're going into, like...
We all have those embarrassing teenage moments where we get a 7-point star carved into our foreheads. And then we realize that's forever.
Excuse me, Mr. High Sparrow?
Yeah. How come you don't have the Sarah points on your
phone? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's for you. Everyone knows when they look at me. This is for you.
We'll take him out back and explain to him why.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Next on my list, number 9, I got to go with Walter Frey. And he is a great villain because his setup of the Red Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that scene is forever in my head, and it's like the main thing I remember about Game of Thrones when anybody brings it up.
It's iconic, and he orchestrated it, so excellent choice. Yeah, Walter Frey. I mean, he's the kind of guy who, you know, I feel like you could go the whole story of Game of Thrones without ever running into him, but if you do, it's going down, you know, because he just sits in his castle with his daughters, and like he doesn't really get out or do much or do anything. You know, he's not really going, he's not like, he's too lazy to go out and like get respect.
No, he just wants his little corner of the world. That's all he really cares about.
Come into my trap.
Yeah, cross my bridge. Like, I'll eat
betrayals in your food. Well, he just betrayed everybody.
He's like the troll of evil villains.
Yeah, he's the worst. When Cersei was going to kill his wife, and he's like, I'll find another. And you're like, ah! So gross.
And they're all like these young.
There's like 15. I can't handle him. Like, he's the worst.
He's one of the grossest, I think, of his of death. Game of Thrones, which is
I agree. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is a lot to say. And like his death made me the happiest.
Yeah,
it's the evil of betrayal. You know, when they say some people say that it's treasonous, or there's like the most inner circle of hell is put aside for those who invite guests deception, into their home.
Yes.
And then do harm to them because, I mean, back in the day, that's really all you had to go on was trust of someone's word. You know, there wasn't like a Yelp review for castles. You know, how do they treat their rivals, you know, when they invite them for dinner? You'll never know. And so to put that trust in someone, to put your life in their hand, to put your arms down and to come in for a peaceful dinner and to get slaughtered, there's no greater evil back in the day than that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I just go out on a date. As soon as we break bread, I know I'm in trustworthy guy's hands.
Yeah. Right. Totally.
Just kidding.
Until he starts playing the reins of Castamere. And then it's like, oh, no, not again.
I saw this already. Obviously, Walter doesn't care about the frailty of human existence, and he will forever be stuck in our minds as a horrible human.
And on meat pies.
Next on my list, Ramsay Bolton.
The Ted Bundy.
I mean, we literally
Game of Thrones.
Exactly. Watching him mutilate these people, Theon, and, you know, he's obviously a bastard. People called him Ramsay Snow, Bastard Bolton. But what he did to Sansa and Theon, who I eventually, you know, came to like, it was just hard to watch. Like, a lot of times I had to look away when it was, you know, his season that we were focusing on his character. I mean, he's a good villain because I just couldn't even stand to look at what he was doing to these people.
Yeah. Right.
To like let him go just to then go chase him back to capture Theon again is just such a psychological and then just to like to castrate a guy, come on. Like that it's a lot.
It's a bit much.
It's a lot.
Not cool, man. Not cool.
Yeah, it's just it's rough.
The Boltons, you gotta hand it to them. I mean, they were almost like predestined to be evil. Look at their banner. It's a flayed man. Like, I don't care who did what. You flay a guy, that's pretty hardcore and that's pretty bad. I would have to say that Roose Bolton was more of a respectable evil man because he was pragmatic in why he did things. And he was almost like a Tywin Lannister in that regard. When he spoke, he commanded respect, and you could really feel the fear of a commanding officer in his voice. But when you look at Ramsay, he was just more of a sadist, a boy who was... likes to play with his toys. He's kind of a sick guy.
He enjoyed it so much. He had
Like
if we were gonna look at like these villains, like Batman villains, you had Walter Frey would maybe be the Penguin, where he's like he likes his little corner, he likes his club, and he's just a little meow 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 meow. But then you have the Joker, which is Ramsay.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. He's the Joker for sure.
Yeah, because he just enjoys what he wants, and he just like. He's that, and it's that joy and that pleasure that makes him the most evil.
He's stricken with a severe case of Schadenfreude, which is German for taking pleasure of others' pain.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I was thinking about that scene. Isn't he the one who shoots Rickon? when he's like running to John.
He does. Yeah. He goes, go to your brother's. Yeah. And then he shoots him in the back with a bow and arrow.
That was really hard to watch, that scene.
It was terrible.
Moving on to Ryan's favorite, Littlefinger, master of coin, master manipulator, accumulated his wealth and intelligence from the brothels that he owned.
Yes.
And he wasn't going to stop until he got the throne, but he fell on the way. Into Arya's sword.
That was a mistrial.
That's great. Yeah.
The love of Littlefinger makes me doubt your
My name. Love of Littlefinger.
Oh, boy.
Will never die.
Oh, boy. Third grossest.
I love this man. I mean, he's a self-made man. You know, I mean, look, he made his own sigil. He's the master chess player. We've already established in prior episodes, if you want to go back and check him out, we have an episode entirely dedicated to Littlefinger that I enjoyed hosting.
This guy, he's
the string puller. He's the puppeteer. He's
the dude that was so in love with his childhood crush and so obsessed that he tried to seduce her daughter.
Okay, all right.
Gross.
We've all...
agreed.
We've all what?
Come to terms with that part of...
There you go.
I was going to say, like, we've all seduced our obsessions, daughters.
Daughters,
I mean, there's not that we've many, you know. There's no Facebook, okay? You can't just go swipe right on somebody. There's only so many people in Westeros worthy.
That's not an excuse.
It's more of a strategic alignment anyway. Look.
You can't make it like, listen, the dating pool is small, so it's okay if he's going after a teenager.
Look, right. I'll go ahead and agree that you can categorize Littlefinger as a villain, okay?
Yes.
But,
thank you.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome, okay? But I will not sit here and allow his good name to be dragged through the mud. he's without Littlefinger, okay, we wouldn't have near as much drama, corruption, and twists and turns as we would in this world. So without,
love to hate him.
I love to love him.
You're the only one
that's
I mean, he let people come in to like kill prostitutes for fun. You know?
Only
when they crossed him.
Oh boy.
She betrayed his trust.
So
Roz. Why would Roz do that? She knew she was who she was messing with.
Don't. Oh, you're just getting grosser. Right. You're
going to
make this list.
Number six, is Ryan Malady. Also known as the Red Priestess. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Melisandre. She's the ambiguous force focused on who should be on the throne. But we can't forget that time she burned an innocent child alive at the stake.
Mm-hmm.
If we bring our Batman villain stuff into this, I would say she's kind of a Catwoman, kind of a Talia al Ghul, where she's I'm getting so
poison,
geeky
poison,
into this
poison
but
ivy,
like
poison
ivy, yeah. Well, oh, Poison Ivy, where it's someone who sometimes is good, she's on the side of, like, she's trying to win the battle for the good people, even though what she does is not so good, and she is kind of evil. And I mean, I'm not excusing the fact that she did kill a little girl, but you did see after it happened, when it was wrong, that she knew it was wrong.
Yeah.
And it's she's a very complex character. She's much more complex than a lot of these villains we're talking about.
Well, she's responsible for a lot of deaths, but I agree, it's more complicated than that. I mean, here's a woman who sees visions, you know, who plays with fire. And doesn't get burned. She has a god who answers her in certain ways. So, I mean, to put aside the mere games of mortals and to follow her own personal intuition as to what she thinks is the right thing to do is something that we haven't seen any other character really have to wrestle with.
Right.
And you're right. So to see her come out the end of it and kind of put those things aside and think, well, maybe there is a morality that I need to start paying attention to.
Yeah.
Kind of redeems her in a way. But she's definitely a villain for most of the series. I mean, with her indifference of throwing people into the flames just so that they could fall in line, is a villain thing to do. I mean, she was the one who corrupted the thoughts and, you know,
Stannis
Baratheon.
Yeah,
you know, she's the one who
Shadow Baby.
Can't yeah, that. Gave birth to a shadow yeah. baby. Come on, she gave birth to a demon.
A creature.
She's
but
a
it
villain.
Didn't help Stannis. And she, that little girl was the sweetest little girl, and that's terrible. And it helped nothing. That you're like, oh, you're going to sacrifice this kid. And like, but maybe it would help. And then it didn't. But then when she resurrected Jon Snow, then you're like, okay, glad we kept her around. But like, I hated her.
I mean, she's another one of these villains that has a strong faith system and belief system, and she feels like what she's doing is right.
Is right.
Even if it's wrong.
I know, it's just,
She's a low sparrow.
It's rough waters.
Number five, the mountain, Sir Gregor Clegane. He's a brutal murderer. Squeezes the brains out of my favorite character, Oberyn Martell, in season four. Burn his brother's face. I mean, this guy is now, like, what, he's got the... all these different animal parts keeping him alive. He's like the Franken monster.
Yeah.
Franken Mountain.
When he decapitates his own horse, I was like, he's a true monster now. Because I hated it. I was like, no. That was the worst.
You can't kill a horse. That's how you lose charm points in Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, over here.
I'm at like level 3 geek right now.
Oh, God.
I actually just got the game. Looking forward to playing it. But yeah, Gregor Clegane, he's your classic muscle bad guy. He's your Bluto to your Popeye. You know, he's just got, his only motivation is to do exactly what he wants when he wants, and because he's capable of bad things, he commits bad things. And that's why he's a villain. You're capable of anything in this world, you know, but it's what you choose to do with the powers that you have that define who you are. So Gregor Clegane stays on the path of a villain while his brother
sways back and forth.
but is on a rising path.
But is on a better path, I think, too. Yeah. He's had a rough life. He had to live at the mountain, man.
Man, I'm looking forward to Clegane Bowl 2019.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It's got to happen. It's got to happen. If it doesn't happen, they'll probably animate it. Like some
it's
going
to happen. It'll happen.
Yeah, you're right.
Number four, my favorite, a mad scientist. Everyone wants a Qyburn in their back pocket. So this guy used to be a former Maester, thrown out for conducting illegal human experiments. He's sort of like Melisandre in that he can bring people back from the dead, but he uses science instead of black magic. I just love how he can create so many different things from science, and I love that aspect of Game of Thrones. I wish we got more of him, actually.
It's like science in air quotes. I think it's kind of it's kind of a black magic-y science.
Yeah, like Shakespeare potions.
Yeah.
I like
evil hamster running in a wheel sort of science.
Yeah, that kind of science. I like him too, but I hate that he has the dragon weapon. That he built the dragon weapon. The dragons are my favorite. And after that, I was like, get out of here. I hope you die.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. But it's weird how he kind of almost feels like a psychic. Because didn't he tell Cersei that he knew that she was pregnant before she did? Didn't he, like...
I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe.
But he also knew about the wildfire underneath, but that's just information he had. That was like a psychic thing. Yeah. But I thought with the pregnancy thing, she didn't know yet, but he was like, there was something weird that happened where he confirmed it. I don't know. Maybe. I might be totally wrong. That was in my brain for some reason.
You're right. And, you know, I usually don't like to speak up unless I'm sure about things, but I am remembering there was something along the lines of where he humored her. I don't think he confirmed anything, but I think
for her
it was one
he
of those
confirmed
things.
Yeah.
It was like, we'll see.
Yeah,
sure, you know, that's one a good of the, idea.
Sure, yeah,
yeah.
Totally.
Her pregnancy
totally
too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's the power behind the power. He's
also a guy who's like wants to just do what he does. Like he wants to do his experiments, and he's on Cersei's side because she's letting him do it.
Do it and leave him alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why he's like, I'll give you the mountain back.
Yeah. Check it out. I made the mountain.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Now leave me alone. Let me get back to it.
Yeah. That's why I kind of like him. He's like, it feels like a true scientist. It feels like what actual scientists are like. There's no moral questions to it.
Yeah, you're right.
Just let's just make stuff.
Yeah.
As long as he produces what you paid for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And acts like it took longer than it needed to take, you know.
Yeah. I kind of feel like if John made him a better offer, he would go over to John.
Probably.
Like, he's just there to do what he does.
Yeah.
And he would, but John's too righteous for that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean you cured Grayscale without asking? I got to brood about this.
Well, that's not.
That's not.
That's not him. That's Sam.
Yeah, you're right. But who knows? He could be down there doing it.
He's probably making a harder grayscale, like a mechanized, weaponized grayscale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's got no chains to weigh him down.
Mm-hmm. Number three, I just want it to be plain House Lannister, but I also want to focus on Joffrey. Oh, yeah. But just House Lannister in general is just like the enemy house, I feel like. But Joffrey, obviously believed to be the eldest son of Robert Baratheon, which we know not to be true. Mm-hmm. He made Sansa look at her father's head on a spike. That was horrible for me. And then him murdering Roz with the crossbow.
Yeah.
Him actually, the purple wedding was one of my favorite moments seeing him on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. We were just like waiting for so many seasons just to see him dead.
Die. Yeah. Yes.
It was a glorious death. Jack Gleason is fantastic actor, and he just friggin' nailed it, man. He's the guy you love to hate. Mm. Every time you see him on screen, he's just so cringy and just wrong. But here's another character where it's a very punchable character, right? But it's also complicated because it's like you look at this child. Look at the people he was raised by, you know, his incestuous mother and uncle, and you know, led to believe that anything that he wants he can have, anything that he does is okay. And you know, that's how you raise a monster. And then when you're given actual power, of course he's going to abuse it.
He's like a rich kid who was raised super spoiled.
Yeah.
Has a punchable face, became the leader of a country, and is just a giant baby about it.
Found out he was a bastard, then massacred all the other bastards.
Sounds so relatable.
I've dated a few Joffreys.
Life mimics art, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Something like that. All right. Yeah, giving my next favorite Lannister in line, number two, Cersei. She commits unspeakable atrocities to save her family. She'll literally do anything to save her family. You know, she basically created Joffrey with Jaime, so she created this little monster.
And also spoiled him to
That's
death.
What I wrote down. Exactly. I'm like, she created a monster.
Exactly. Yeah. A totally. Monster from a monster. How do you guys feel about Cersei? I mean, she's kind of like the Mad King. I thought she was just like... I mean, at this point, she doesn't have any friends. She's just, like, spiraled down.
That's the thing.
She's unpredictable.
Before, she would be doing all these unspeakable acts. I mean, she blew up the Sept, you know, and all these innocent people. I mean, she's a true master villain who's kind of been hardened over and over and over by the loss of each family member. Now, she doesn't really have anyone left. And so, for a woman who has nothing to lose, who was already a villain, it's even scarier. Now, I think she's on a tipping point where she might tip one side into... chaotic, you know, ruthless leadership, or maybe into the other, into finding a newfound sense of, you know, redemption. And do you
think
that
she's
far
fast redeeming?
You think so?
Well, the thing is, she's very relatable. She's someone who's like had to fight for her place.
Yeah.
She was seen as, for one, she's a woman in this society that's all they're made for is to like get married off to some king and. Then they're done, and then they can produce another king, and then they're done. So she actually had to fight to get her voice heard, and then she has such a love for family it makes it so you can kind of respect her because she's just trying to protect her kid. She's trying to she has a love that she can't really show, even though it's a very incestuous love. It's still like, and then she was forced to be married to this guy who became kind of a fat. Drunk, you know, and she's had it kind of tough, so it makes her relatable. It doesn't excuse her from stuff,
but I feel like, don't you feel like Tommen, he killed himself because she orchestrated the whole thing with by killing his wife, and it's like, well, you made your kid it's a loss.
You're one good kid,
and I know
you're one good, the one kid that could actually be a good king because he doesn't want to be king.
And then she tells Jaime that he betrayed the family by killing himself, and you're like, dude, you want to look deeper into that maybe?
Yeah,
and like, you know,
she totally doesn't see inside her own flaws. Totally has to block them out.
Right.
And that's what makes her, that's so evil. Because she just thinks that she's right all the time.
I think she's brilliant. You know, do you remember when Littlefinger and her had a little moment in...
I'm sure you're going to remind us.
Littlefinger's, you know...
I'm sure this
climbing.
Wasn't the fan fiction that you wrote.
It's under my bed. Okay. So they're walking down. Littlefinger's getting a little cocky because he's, you know, working for Hand of the King on the council and all this stuff. And he mentions something to her about how he kind of knows about her and Jamie. And he's like, well, you know, knowledge is power. And then she's like, oh. And she's like, guards, slit his throat. And then, like, they start to. And she's like, I changed my mind. Turn around. Take three steps. And then she, like, whispers to him, like power is power. And so her perspective on what power is so, and the whole show, I was actually, to bring it back earlier from previous villains, when you remember when Varys was saying to Tyrion, power is a curious, I have it pulled up, power is a curious thing. Three great men, a king, a priest, and a rich man. Between them stands a common sellsword. Each great man bids the sellsword kill the other two. Who lives? Who dies? Tyrion's like, well, I don't know. You know. Varys says, power resides where men believe it resides. It's a trick, a shadow on the wall, and a very small man can cast a very large shadow. Which is a wonderful quote from Varys. But this show wrestles with the idea of power, what it is, philosophically, and realistically. And I think Cersei is a very realistic type character, realistic villain, where she knows when she has power, and she knows when it's slipping. And whenever it starts to slip, you can tell that she maneuvers her way back into it. And for that, you got to respect her.
Right. Yeah. I mean, she was born into it. She doesn't know anything else other than power. All right, I want to talk...
But true power cometh.
Exactly. I want to talk about the coldest of cold-blooded killers, the Night King, the commanding force of the White Walkers. Seems he wants to wipe out all of mankind. You know, guys, I'm kind of hoping that Melisandre can release him from his curse. Do you guys see that happening?
I mean, yeah.
The thing is, what a you know, empathetic way to look at it. Release him from his curse.
Like,
that's looking at him as a victim.
I feel like he likes it. You know, he's like into it now.
He's so.
I mean, especially now that he's got a white dragon.
Yeah.
He's going to be flying around having the time of his life.
Yeah. The thing is, like, the thing with the Night King and all of the whites is, like, they're forces of nature. There's no real motivation except the way that a cancer has motivation.
Yeah.
Just to spread and take over and devour. Mm-hmm. And that's why there are, like, a lot of parallels that we've talked about before with global warming and climate change. And they're just something that's coming, and it's more important than all the little petty political squabbles, because it's, you can't understand it, and it's unstoppable, and it's just spreading. It's a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to be able to, like, that's what makes it so evil, because there's no reasoning with it. So it's not a person to be cured right now of any sort of curse that I could see, because it's just evil. It's like... And I don't know who the Night King is. No one really does. And that's, there's theories about that. But, like, it's that cancer of it that makes him the worst villain.
I feel like Bran's going to step in eventually and have a big role to play.
If not become the Night King, like a lot of people think.
Oh, maybe.
Guys, we just have a few seconds left, but I want to throw a quick game your way.
Throw it at us.
Okay, who would win in a fight? Ramsay versus Joffrey, go.
Ramsay. Yes.
On hand, like, personal hand-to-hand? Ramsay, duh.
Just but as even, a villain, stacking as one a villain.
Joffrey would have just called the Hound on him. Joffrey wins.
Okay. No, number two, Cersei versus Melisandre.
I put that Cersei would find help because she always does.
Right, just like Joffrey would.
Yeah, but...
The Lannisters don't fight themselves.
Melisandre can birth demons. So, like, I don't know. Cersei could come up with an army, and then she's like, I'm going to birth 12 demons right now, and you're all dead.
I got a bunch of demon babies.
I think Cersei has, like, more of a game... chess master.
So. That's what I mean. Like, she knows how to, like, find before fight. She finds, before the Red Woman even knows it.
Yeah. So she would be like, okay, yeah, I'll meet you at the playground at high noon.
Yeah.
Sons of the Harpy versus the Mountain. She's taking
this is interesting.
It's like an idea, like a immovable object meets an unstoppable force.
Uh-huh.
You know?
This is interesting because I think the Mountain could be overpowered.
What about the mountain versus the actual dead man? He's already dead.
Oh, that's
he's
the question. Like Frankenmountain?
Frankenmountain.
Oh, Frankenmountain. Frankenmountain.
100%. He's already a dead man.
Yeah. I think the only one that could kill Frankenmountain is probably his brother with a flaming sword.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You'd have to be with a flaming sword.
Hint. Yeah. Okay, guys. Drop last one. Mic. Everyone versus the Night King.
Good versus evil.
Night King. It's Night King.
Yeah. I mean, everyone. Like, all the villains are just everyone.
Well, all the villains are obviously going to have to come together in some fight the Night King.
I would love it to be like the underdogs of everyone, and everyone is an underdog, which makes it interesting to win. But
nobody here has any dragon glass, so...
Well, Valerian or Valerian Steel.
Yeah, I'm not... Well, no, you're right.
They're going to share
Joffrey
their weapons,
has a
Valerian
Steel but
that is going to do with it.
We're sharing. We're spreading the weapons
Joffrey
around.
Would win over the Night King.
The Dayman. Destroys the Night King.
Who does?
The Dayman.
It's always sunny in Philadelphia.
I don't know. Okay.
It's a reference from another show. Guys. Crossover. Nobody knows.
They're making us wrap up. You guys can find me, Kristen Elizabeth Snyder, on all the social mediums at Cinematic Escape. Mr. Dave Child, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me at Mr. Dave Child, Mr. Dave Child on Twitter, and the Instagrams are DaveChild.com. Why? Because I'm a Dave Child.
Wow. I'm Tara Erickson, and you can find me at Tara Erickson. TaraErickson, and on YouTube with the same name.
I like that. That's very sexy. I like that
it's
one.
Good,
the best.
Right?
Yeah, very good.
Better
very
than
good.
Dave's.
Wow.
Can you top that, Ryan Malotti? What do you got for us?
And I'm Ryan Malotti.
It's just always Littlefinger.
Perfectly done.
Every time. Yeah.
Where can we find you?
Keep up with me at my name everywhere, Twitter, Instagram. I'm not really on Twitter as much anymore, but yeah, find me out there. Shoot me a geeky question. I'll try to answer it with the geeky answer. And thank you guys so much. Please subscribe if you haven't. Give us a like and a comment. We love to read them. And we'll
I think
you.
Next month we should talk about the love stories of Game of Thrones. I don't know. I'm not the host. Up to you guys. But I think that'd be cool. You know, month of February. You can catch us the last week of February. Usually the last Wednesday or Thursday at 6 or 7 o'clock. We can't wait till the new season begins. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great night. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.